Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're back for episode 2 of our, well, viewing review fan cast of Prodigal Son Season 1. I'm just enjoying the show. What can I say? I mean, I think you're going to agree with me when I say what I'm about to say, which is it was hard to stop watching episodes last night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I want to know what's
going. Yeah. Yeah.
And well, we can't,
Yeah, episode 6 ended on one heck of a cliffhanger, which we will get to. But let's start with episode 4, Designer Complicity, which is, I have no idea what that sentence refers to. Like, it's just, that makes it sound like the term designer complicity sounds like an actual saying, but I have no idea what that saying refers to.
If there is an actual saying, somebody could tell us.
But, okay, that would be great.
I mean, what it does refer to is Axel X was complicit in his girlfriend's death.
Well, you know? Obviously. I understand in the episode, but the fact that it's a title makes it sound, the way it's used as a title makes it sound like it's more meaningful than just a reference to the episode. But I guess we'll see.
Well, this isn't Criminal Minds.
That's true. You're right. I shouldn't be looking for deeper meanings everywhere.
Yeah. Don't try.
Don't assume that there is attempts at profundity all the time. The way we learn to, you know, love from Criminal Minds.
Yes.
I'll say this about the show Prodigal Son. It doesn't think it's smarter than it is. Mm. I think we can say that's a true fact about the show Prodigal Son. That something that we are definitely responding to is that it 100% doesn't think it's smarter than it actually is.
It understands what it is.
Oh, absolutely. All right. So let's get to it. A model has been murdered with left in a tub with an elaborate blue face makeup. Just a truly weird presentation. And just for the record, there's this scene in the episode where people are, you know, Lou Diamond Phillips Captain Arroyo is explains that he's confused about what an influencer is because he's an old man. And I'm like, just for the record, influencers are not mysterious. They are not strange. They are not like unusual. They're just models who endorse products. For the entire history of commerce, there have been models who endorse products. Going back to Rome, there were models who endorse products. That's all influencers are.
Yeah, well, no, but that's the funny thing. Yeah, back in Rome, for heaven's sakes, gladiators
would endorse products. Like, yeah, there'd be a
would endorse of a products.
There'd be a picture of a popular gladiator, and it's like he only uses olive oil X. That's a real thing that really happened. Which, by the way, and this is my favorite story about the movie Gladiator, they had to cut out of the movie Gladiator because test audiences were like, oh, what is this bizarre thing to try and make it more like modern sports? And like they were like, but this actually happened. They're like, nope, audience is going to find it too strange and make it think it's fake.
Because it is only recent. It's a lot of things we found out of. Because of Pompeii.
Exactly. Because of the excavations of Pompeii. And you have, all this actual writing you can read.
Well, and not only that, but everything is in pristine condition because it was covered in...
It was completely covered in ash and soot. So
and lava.
Exactly. And lava. And so they crack away the lava and you've got perfectly preserved, people, but pottery, tools, you have...
Walls. You know,
entire walls, mosaics, like it's amazing.
They just opened. They have just done a bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. It's incredible. No, it's like I you know went through. I spent like a week after the first pictures went online, just going through all of the Pompeii stuff, and it's amazing what they found. But yeah, so for the record, there's nothing mysterious or strange. They are just, you know, models endorsing products. As long as people have been selling a product that they thought of as a product, they have been paying famous or attractive people to promote that product. That's just always.
It's just the new term for it, right? Exactly. That people kind of, like even I look, social media influencer. Actually, there's a social media influencer in my game.
I don't know what your game is.
Yeah, this Lily's Garden. Right.
Yes, yes. That, yeah.
There was a social media. Now we're getting to the tabloid stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, she's talking about one of her free-to-play games. I got confused for a second.
Yes.
But
yes,
no, it's just a modern word for a very, very, very old premise.
Well, yeah, it's just like, yeah. You know, I mean, part of, you know, a social media, the Rolling Stones songs are social media. They make them a social media influencer too, because they use their songs to products.
Exactly.
There's people, like, and then this is just the Instagram.
Yeah, the only difference is that these people focus on Instagram posts rather than, you know, traditional media.
Oh,
but it's not really that much of a difference.
Now we're going to talk about. I deleted my WhatsApp.
Oh, okay.
I had WhatsApp because, you know, because I, anyway, I had it. Never really. I don't use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not important why. I never really use it. But on New Year's Day,
yeah,
it just kept.
Dinging over and over again.
All these people. Why I'm getting all these people going Happy New Year.
Oh.
I just said enough. 99 yeah. plus. It was, and I'm going, oh, I'm not going to go in here and delete them. I guess there's probably a way to delete all of them and blah, blah. Just delete the app. I don't use it. And if I have to tell the one or two people that wanted to use WhatsApp.
Yeah, you're just
That I have deleted it, and you're just going to have to do the Zoom thing or the Skype thing, or
you can use one of the 800 other ways that we have to contact one another these days.
I mean, at least Instagram, everything that comes from the three people that I follow on Instagram come up.
Exactly, and you're not getting a bunch of
right at the top.
Garbage.
Well, no, there is if you wanted to go through it.
Yeah, but the
Here's
stuff
garbage,
from people you
garbage,
want to hear
garbage.
About.
People
is right
you
want to
follow. You'd love to follow this person. No.
No.
No,
100%
I'm just doing
I don't care what person X has to say about makeup tutorials. All right. So she has been murdered. And the question is, well, who's the killer? Now she's being. Now, what's interesting is they immediately profile that it was a stalker.
Yeah.
Because. She was posed like one of her, she was
well,
posed
her very
like a famous
first.
Cover.
It was
yeah, her,
her,
very
her very
first.
First
I said cover because I still think of her as a model, but an ad campaign. Her very first ad campaign that was the breakout. She was posed like that. So they assume it's someone who's obsessed with her, right? And that's not an unreasonable thing to do. And so we get some nice psychological explanations of what stalkers are and how stalkers work. And I think that stuff all sounded pretty solid. I mean, this is just me personally, like the whole idea of thinking that you are romantically in love with, like not only thinking that you're in love with someone, but living under the delusion that you have a reciprocal relationship is what's so key to stalkers and why stalkers become violent so much of the time is when they will do anything to like. Keep that reciprocal relationship that exists in their minds from disappearing. And if they're confronted with the fact that it's not real, they can get incredibly violent, incredibly quickly.
Yes. Like Donald Trump losing the election.
Well, yes. He thought the American people loved him too.
Yes. And all of a sudden he found out that a whole bunch of them didn't.
In fact, the vast majority of them don't like him at all. But that's a whole other conversation.
No, but I mean, you're talking about delusions and then becoming incredibly angry.
Hostile
and angry.
Once the delusion is revealed. Yeah.
When the delusion, you break, this is why they keep telling people, just don't, when people have these delusions,
don't confront them. Yeah.
Don't confront them because if you confront them, they might be willing to talk with you. But maybe if you confront them too harshly or you get too angry, they can get pretty violent when their delusions are...
It's exposed, if you will. Yeah. it's a terrifying situation. And the show does a decent job of explaining how serious it all is. So I thought that part was well handed. So then we go through the normal investigation stuff, right? Where mm-hmm. they go and talk to her boyfriend, who's a designer. They realize a photographer is stalking her, right?
Yes.
They realize a photographer has been stalking her. And so they're like, oh, well, maybe he's the killer because he fits the various profile. But, and this is leaning very heavily on the psychology thing. They all listen to Bright when he's like, he's just not the right kind of stalker.
Yeah. Yes, he's a stalker, but he's not delusional.
Yeah, he's not delusional. He doesn't think they're in a relationship. No. He just knows this is a pretty woman he likes following around and taking pictures of. It is a much less dangerous form of stalking in its own way.
Yes, and he gets the real clue from him.
Yeah, which is right? That, and this is where we get into the voodoo, like the voodoo aspect of it. The people, the thing about profiling that people find a little preposterous, but because what what Bright's thing is that he is constantly, I know it's Malcolm Bright, I keep saying Cameron for some reason. What he keeps doing, right, is that he says what kind of responses he's getting. Like, so it's essentially, we're going into the realm of micro expressions.
Yes.
Which is an in no way scientifically proven theory that people are constantly revealing their thoughts and emotions on their face. And he's saying that essentially, based on the way the guy is reacting, he's reacting like a guy who's hiding something. And if he's not hiding that he's the killer, which he's not, what could, and they're sure he's not the killer, what could he conceivably be hiding? So Malcolm pushes him. And of course, the guy doesn't want to talk. And then he gets run over by a car.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh my God, are they going to kill this guy off? And the answer is no, he's fine.
Well, he will be fine. Not that he knows that, because Malcolm says he's going into surgery.
And that's where we get into the really questionable moral thing that Malcolm does, which is he tells this man that he's going to die. And so his last act can be to get justice for this woman he was obsessed with. Wow. And this brought mixed emotions for me, because it's a very funny scene, right? It's handled very well, but... Okay, did I ever tell you why I stopped watching the show Numbers?
I can't remember.
Okay, I'm sure I did, but I'll just quickly go through it right now. So, in the episode, the show Numbers is about the FBI, and an FBI agent has a brother who's good at math, and that's the whole show. If you haven't seen it, it's an okay police procedural. Like,
yeah, it's not a great show.
It's not a great show, but it's fine. Now, if you're looking for a police procedural, you can do a lot worse than Numbers. So I'm watching a random episode of Numbers, right? And this is back in 2006 or something. And the FBI agent in charge, you know, I'm blanking on the actor's name, but he was the star of Northern Exposure back in the day. Right? Way back in the day now. But anyway, the FBI agent in charge. It's weird that I can't remember his name. I can tell you John Corbett's name. You know, the radio host and that. But then again, he went on to be on a lot of other stuff. But anyway, the point is, so they're going to talk to this guy, right? And I assume the guy wasn't an American because of what happens next. I don't remember the plot of the episode. But he casually, just as part of trying to get information out of the guy, essentially says, we're going to send you to Guantanamo if you don't help us with this.
Oh, I remember that.
And I'm watching it. Yeah. And I'm like, I just watched an episode of television where the heroes just said, we're going to send you to a concentration camp for the rest of your life if you don't help us catch somebody. And I'm like, there would be no difference if this were a show made in, you know, Nazi Germany about the Gestapo.
Yeah, but it's the post 9/11 stuff.
That's what I'm saying. Like it got so, and so I get pretty iffy when, like, I know cops are allowed to lie to people, but every time I see a cop do an extravagant lie and or make people think they're going to die or something like that, I get a little iffy. Just a little.
Well, here's the thing. If they're real cops.
Yeah.
Right? And Malcolm gets away with it because he's not a cop.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. He doesn't need that. Like, he's consulting. He doesn't. I'm sure he's not getting paid any meaningful amount.
Because, I'm not getting paid at all. Well, he's, He's got loads and loads of money. Wealthy, mother. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, his mother. You know that they're all independently wealthy, so that they don't need to get paid. Mm-hmm. He just needs to do it to keep himself alive.
Oh, absolutely. So you're right. He gets away with it. And in the same way, the mentalist would constantly do unethical things.
Yeah, but he was always a consultant. And
he was always a consultant, and it was borderline. But he was, you know, and it's the kind of thing I would see the mentalist doing. But it's weird that I accept it more there, because he is a criminal. You know, his whole career beforehand was being a petty thief and con man, you know?
Yeah.
And so I kind of expect that from him, but it's like, this guy was an FBI agent, and he's still doing unbelievably shady things. It just makes me a little nervous. But I'm not going to say it's not a funny scene, it made me very happy. The FBI did fire him, yes.
Yes. Okay, because what keeps it light, of course, is when the guy asks him to take care of his cat.
I know! Oh, that's so good!
You know, I mean, you have to look at the things, like, I guess to me, it's like every night, this, looking at these and going, wow.
Yeah.
You know, they are really getting over they're really trying to keep this, given the subject matter.
Given the unbelievably bleak subject matter.
Subject matter, yes.
They're trying to keep this as light as possible and doing an amazing job.
Yeah.
They're doing a surprisingly good job of keeping this show light, given, as you say, the unbelievably bleak subject matter.
Yeah.
It's very impressive, like, with what they're accomplishing with the tone of this show.
Yeah, I don't know.
For a brutal show, it's very fun. Like, it really is. You have a good time. And I think 90% of that's Malcolm's, the actor's performance is Malcolm. You know, it's like 90% of why it stays fun. But generally, the show, and by the way, the other thing is not getting way too into the gore.
Yeah.
I think it helps that generally only one person gets killed a week.
Yep.
I think that helps a lot. And they're not dealing. And this is the other thing that separates of Criminal Minds. They're not dealing with a serial killer every week. So every week you're not hearing a story about how this guy has raped and murdered 38 women. Every single week.
No, we've got Dr. Whitley for that.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't have to bring anybody else in. You just got Dr. Whitley.
Yeah, and so I really like that. Also, one weird thing that happened at the start of the episode is I'm beginning to think his therapist isn't the best therapist.
She goes to her,
and she's like, I can't believe you took chloroform. What were you thinking? It's incredibly dangerous. And I'm like, okay, he came to you and said, I think my dad dosed me with chloroform when I was a kid to make me forget about the girl in the box and mess with my head. And her response to this was, have you ever smelled chloroform? It's actually very sweet. You know, it's kind of interesting how the sense that is most closely tied to memory is smell, and so you can smell things and immediately remember them. You basically told him.
No, his psychiatrist didn't say that. No, it wasn't his psychiatrist.
Oh, no, you're right. It was the other psychiatrist.
It was the psychologist.
It was the other
doing
psychologist.
The LSD stuff.
You're right. I completely forgot which psychiatrist it was. My bad. I'm not objecting. I take everything back.
Okay. The child. No, you still have to object, because this woman.
Yeah.
Is still. That whole scene, I'm going, Malcolm, you need to find yourself a new shrink.
Yes. Yeah, no, I mean.
Listen to that. First of all, it was dangerous, but he did it, and obviously he's still alive. She's still treating him like he was a child.
Yeah.
And he needs to be treated like he's an adult who is trying to get back recovered memories. Her job as a child psychiatrist is to deal with children, and she should have gotten this out of Malcolm probably earlier on, but it's because she didn't believe him, and she didn't believe, she's not a good psychiatrist.
Well, and I think the thing that shocked me most,
and she wasn't a good child.
oh, child psychiatrist either. The thing that gets me about that scene is, again, it's something you pointed out last week, is that why are people so skeptical about the idea that his father was drugging him and trying to get him to forget stuff? Like, his father was a a narcissistic psychopath and a serial killer who, as part of his MO, regularly drugged and murdered people. So, like, I think the idea that he would use drugs on his own child to get him to forget something. And by the way, they know that he found, like, they know that he was a serial killer. They know that the son found creepy stuff in the basement and was caught finding creepy stuff in the basement. Like, they believe all of that is true, but for some reason they draw the line at the idea that his dad was drugging him to find something. And I don't know why the characters reticent about it.
No, they draw the line at the idea that the father had a woman in the trunk.
I know, like, no one can believe that.
Why are they not believing this child?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, why? I mean, and this is what I said right from the beginning. They're all, the psychiatrist is one of those cases where this is the wrong psychiatrist for a child, this child, because this child needs to be believed and she doesn't believe him.
Well, and that's the crazy thing. Is she a Jungian?
I don't know.
And what I really don't understand is why, and I think it factors in there, it's like, why do people find it preposterous that he would have had a girl locked in a trunk? Like, he's a serial killer.
Yeah, in his own home.
He murdered people all the time, and he had a torture basement, a torture dungeon in his own house. Why is it so crazy that the guy could have found a girl in the trunk?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird scene, I think, for that reason. And no, she's not a good psychiatrist.
Well, first of all, as I said, she is a child psychiatrist, and she can't get him to go. She has wanted him to go to somebody else. I will give her this much.
Yeah, she has tried to recommend.
She's tried to get him to go to somebody else, but he won't. He just keeps showing up at her office.
Yeah.
And there's something really wrong with that. But she's tried to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to say that she's seeing him, but she's not equipped to handle him. She knows it. She's trying to get him to go to somebody else.
Yeah.
But when she says, no, I can't see you anymore, he just shows up at the office.
Yep.
And then she says, okay, here we go again.
Yeah.
But the problem is she still doesn't believe him. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, we'll see. I mean, what's going to happen by the end of this year?
Well, it's obviously going somewhere. Like, no doubt about that. That's obviously obviously going somewhere very quickly.
Yeah, I thought it was very, very stupid to dose himself with chloroform.
Why didn't you do that with, like, supervision?
Yeah, well, like, because
get medical supervision. I know. Because
Nobody believes him,
that's true. But it's like... call one of your friends over and just have them be there to call an ambulance if your breathing starts. And then I realized, oh, wait, friend?
He doesn't have any friends. I mean, the only reason Danny stayed there was because Arroyo.
Yeah. Oh, to order two. You mean the previous episode? I was going to say because he got high, but that's the next episode.
Yeah. No. I mean, take him home.
Yeah, and so to get back to the plot for a second, it turns out all that the stalker photographer had seen, and he was being he had been told to keep X amount of yards away from her, so he wasn't allowed to follow her around and take pictures. And the reason he was being so coy is that he had taken pictures and seen her having a very loud and vicious argument with her boyfriend Axel X.
Yes.
And so that brings them back, but that puts them in a weird position. Like, we're 100% sure Axel isn't the killer.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the big deal with her, like, them having this big fight? And then they realize, okay, it must be someone trying to protect Axel from her leaving.
Yeah.
And ruining his reputation and talking about the fact that he hit her. And so there's really, at that point, only two suspects, his bodyguard and his publicist. And considering that his publicist would likely have difficulty overpowering and strangling a woman the exact same side as her, they just go with the bodyguard.
Yeah. And what I liked about it is that, like, because the thing is you have shades of Spencer when you see him in the, you know, going to talk to Axel.
Yes.
Right? You have that idea, right? And then getting him outside and talking to him.
Putting himself in danger.
But he's not stupid.
No.
He's got backup.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the show pulls that traditional TV thing. The TV show thing where they show the team being mad at him and not wanting to go along with his plan so that we can be surprised when they come in to rescue him. But I'm like,
well, what we think, because Arroyo says, no, yeah, we're going to do this right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get the warrants.
Yeah.
So obviously the police Malcolm did wait till the warrants came, and then he did this.
Oh, absolutely.
We don't know this until...
Well, no, but I think it is fair that I say that it is specifically edited to imply that
is. It is implied that he's pulling a Spencer, but he's not.
No, he's not. Well, no, and I'm just saying that it is... I always find it a little annoying when the audience... When they, like, just cut out scenes so that you'll be surprised. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not that surprised. And I kind of feel like you were just being emotionally manipulative.
Oh, but
I know. People are allowed to structure drama to be as dramatic as they want. I am not saying they're not allowed to do that. I'm just saying.
And besides, they only have 42 minutes.
They do. And they have to create as much fun and drama as they can in that 42 minutes. I understand completely.
And we need to spend a lot of time with Malcolm, Ainsley, mother, father.
That's true. You're right. And that is an interesting thing about the show, is that you can't have. And this is, by the way, why there stopped being cases of the week. I mean, I don't think there's going to stop being case of the week on this, obviously. That's not the kind of show it is. But you look at Hannibal. They were forced by the network to have a case every week, right?
For
the first season. And it, like, really, the cases are so brief and perfunctory. And only a couple of the cases really matter. And they do a good job of tying a couple of them in with what is going on with Will Graham and Hannibal. But generally, you can tell they didn't want to be doing a case of the week. And in season two, they just stopped doing a case of the week. And it just starts being the story of these two guys and everybody who gets caught up in between them. Whereas here, it's not that the cases are perfunctory. It's that, you know, you can't do elaborate cases with lots of witnesses and suspects like you did on Criminal Minds, simply because, as you say, you've got to devote 15 minutes every week to Ainsley and mother and Michael Sheen.
Yeah, you can't have all of these faults, as you say, you know, accusing so-and-so and accusing so-and-so and the rest of it.
Turns out he had an alibi and blah, blah, blah. No, like...
No. So you don't... And all of the alibi thing and the rest of it, like, because they do suspect Axel, but he does have an alibi. And somebody just comes in and says, yes, his alibi checked out, so... You know, it's not him.
Done and done,
and that's it. You know, you don't have any of this stuff. Okay, that's fine. And you have the sense that time passes elsewhere, that the cops are doing their job.
Yeah, and I'll say about these Malcolm, two episodes. Oh, please continue, Malcolm.
No. I was just going to say, while Malcolm is falling apart.
Yeah.
Right? And we're watching this. Now, when did he have the dream of his mother with the red dress?
That was this episode.
Yeah.
Because
okay,
he confronts her about, did she know?
Yeah.
And this is the episode. And that's, I'll say this about these two episodes, 4 and 5. Unlike the first three, the murders this week don't really manage to weave the murders this week into the overall plot of the show. Like, there's nothing really thematically connecting the whole stuff with the stalker and the boyfriend and the influencer to anything that's going on with Cameron's story or any of the character's story. Like, the closest it gets to being relevant is that we learn that JT was a fan of this influencer because she did a USO thing when he was in Afghanistan.
Well, I could say that in some ways, what you're finding out about the mother, right?
Yeah.
Like, first of all, you see the mother bloody well knew when you hear what she said. she had to know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and I mean, that is from Malcolm too, you know, yes. you already get that impression that Malcolm knows that she knows, and mm-hmm. that you have, because, and I'm just as glad they don't do this, but I mean, this woman, this is her boyfriend. This is the man who made her famous.
Yeah.
And she's walking out on him mm-hmm. to go to another media company.
Yep.
And, you know, so there's just this the social status thing that the yeah. mother suffers from and it gets, as we go along the next two episodes, like the next episode,
yeah,
which you could get to, is going to deal with that. That interesting interview, right?
Yes.
I mean, because that's the other thing Malcolm wants.
Yeah,
no,
we'll get to that. And I can see you, but
that's in this episode.
Oh no, I know it is in this episode. But what I'm saying is, I think it's a bit tenuous to link that to the murder plot this week.
Yeah,
and yeah, you're right that you're dealing with similar issues of maintaining status and women debating whether or not they can leave the person who is claims to be or is responsible for their social position. Yeah, like you can say that there's kind of, but it doesn't, I don't think it really lands as the them being parallel at all. And it's the same next week, because next week's episode, well, the next episode we're going to talk about is just about learning more about Danny finally. But yeah, let's get into the stuff with the mother, though, because that was very good. Because we got left in the last episode with a big cliffhanger suggesting that there is a slight chance that she knew about the murders. Now, of course, we know, as an audience, that there's no way she knew about the murders. Because there's no show if she knew about the murders. Like, you can't keep doing the show. I mean, it would blow up the entire plot of the show if she knew about the murders, because then he's got to put his mother in jail. Or he's got to not put his mother in jail and kind of ruin him as a character. So it's like, it's this weird situation where they're teasing us with the idea that maybe she knew, but it's like, but there's no show the next week if his mother knew. See what I'm saying?
Oh, I'm not as convinced.
See, whereas I am. Like, it's, I don't, well, okay. It's, I guess you're right that she could have had information. Like, we still might find out something bad about her. I'm just saying, I guess I should say more clearly, they're not going to announce in episode 4 of this show that his mother knew about
them. Oh, no, I don't think, no, I'm thinking way down the line.
Way down the line, we could find out some stuff, absolutely.
But I do think, I'm
especially when we get into the question of who was the girl in the box.
Well, but the issue is that she knows her husband is extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
And she knows, like, that when she catches him in the red dress, right?
Yeah.
And she just, you know, just says, you don't know how dangerous he is. Yep. You can't, you know. And what you get is the reason why she has spent her life trying to convince him that there was no woman in that trunk.
Yeah.
Because she's afraid of him.
Oh, absolutely.
She's still afraid of him. And as we find out in the next two episodes, she's probably right to be afraid of him.
Oh, yeah. All right. So, the stuff with the mother is really good this week. Again, fantastic performances. Like, especially in the, when we see the videotape of her old interrogation. Really good performance in the videotape of her old interrogation. Like, just stellar stuff all around. Loved the mother's performance this week. Really gives you a sense of where she was, you know, upon getting this horrific news about her husband. It's a very good set of scenes. And again, mm-hmm. more importantly, it moves us forward into interesting places.
Yep.
So yeah, good episode overall. Like I said, my one disappointment with these two episodes is it doesn't really tie in meaningfully to Malcolm's arc. But overall, very good episode. I really had a good time with it because the mystery works fine and the personal stuff really works. It's just the lack of the crossover there that we got in all of the first three episodes. I was a little disappointed, but that's it.
Well, you know, they can't all work.
Exactly. They can't all be perfect. It's not Hannibal. I know. Don't worry. Okay. All right, next up we have The Trip. Where Malcolm, as ragged as we've seen him so far, is now, as we learn, like, days without sleep. He is suffering from an absurd amount of insomnia. Like, he hasn't slept in days. He is a complete and utter mess. And he's like, I've got to work a case or I don't know who I am. So he works, you know, a case that is just
the drug case. Yeah.
Seems, and because this is this kind of show, it seems like the most generic case in the world. But of course, really something else is going on.
Yes.
And this is please go.
No, no, I was just saying that it's interesting with Malcolm's lack of sleep. You know, it's that, like, I was thinking about night terrors after I finished watching the three episodes. I was thinking about that and I'm going, yeah, you know, I mean, that's one way to solve the problem, this chronic insomnia. If you just never go to sleep, like, I mean, the funny thing is Supernatural dealt with one of those episodes. But, like, I will tell you that there are times over the years, over the decades that I have had that same, like, I will be asleep and I don't remember my dreams. I remember my dreams, then there's something really hugely relevant there. Yeah. But I think I pull a Malcolm to some extent. Because sometimes I will wake up. I will just wake up and I will not go back to sleep.
Right.
It's not a question. I don't want to go back to sleep. I don't want to go back into whatever world I was in that I just jumped. I woke myself up out of and decided I was wide awake.
Wow.
At 2:30 in the morning for no reason.
You really understand where he's coming from.
No, I can understand why he doesn't want to sleep. And you don't want to take the drugs because the drugs don't really help.
Yeah.
Because the problem with the sleeping, the not sleeping or the waking up like this, is that there's something that you're trying hard not to remember.
Right.
There's something that you're dealing with in your dreams that is just too scary in some ways. Now, you know, I mean, that doesn't happen to me very often anymore.
But you've had enough of these experiences that you know exactly where the character is coming from.
I know it's like, now his case is extreme.
Well, of course. It's fiction. Of course it's going to be the most
extreme. It's going to be really
possible
extreme
version of it.
Yeah, but that kind of a thing. Yeah.
You totally get it.
Yeah. Never had a sleeping pill.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Never knew that.
No, never taken a sleeping pill in my life.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so we get into the episode. He's having real problems because he can't get to sleep because he is haunted by these nightmares, right?
Yeah. And they're now becoming waking nightmares.
Yeah. Becoming waking nightmares. And we do, again,
I mean, the psychiatrist is right. Telling him, you know, when she tells him, well, if you don't sleep, this is what's going to start to happen. And sure enough, it starts to happen, right?
Yeah, and they do some really good jobs with coming up with some fantastic imagery for those nightmares.
Oh, yeah, like the body with the chain and the...
I know.
You know, and like...
Very
and,
good images.
Yeah, and this is where, of course, he goes out to sleep before he sees the thing. The night before, of course, he couldn't sleep, so he got up and he went walking and he sees this van, station wagon. And he starts seeing these things, right? And it turns out it was just a dog in there.
Yeah, he sees what he thinks is, I mean, we all know what he thinks he sees. He thinks he sees the woman from the box, you know, under a blanket in the back of the truck chained, in the back of the station wagon chained up. We all know what he thinks he sees, right? The show makes it very clear. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's just a dog. And that is the start of his wonderful, you know, unbelievably creepy people hanged, people, you know, being impaled with chains and good. Just very, very effective imagery in this episode.
Yeah, the one in the church was just...
Oh, I know.
Just, you know, so...
So and good.
And for a sec, I was going, is there really that body in the church?
I know, right? Going,
wait a sec.
No, of course not. We know he's having dreams.
This is his walking dreams.
Yeah.
Walking nightmares.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's, but yeah. And the thing is, I will say that I am glad that they put the dream sequences in this and the stuff with the car in this, because, Anna, you can feel free to disagree with me on this one. I didn't think much of the mystery this week.
Oh, well, no, it wasn't really, no. I mean, it's just, this is just to hinge, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that basically this, oh, it's funny. The Wikipedia still is, you wonder sometimes whether they watch the shows.
Yeah.
Malcolm is exposed to hallucinogenic drugs. No, he got cocaine.
No, he had ecstasy.
An ecstasy.
A mix of cocaine and ecstasy, yeah.
Yeah.
So he he's just in a great mood, and the drugs he takes have nothing to do with his visions. That's just his lack of sleep.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he ends up having a, and then we get the fun scene of him, you know, being high and finally being able to relax for once in his life.
Yeah, and then he goes to sleep.
And then he goes to sleep finally, and I'm like, yeah, maybe the drugs were an okay idea. Who knows?
Well, but a weird mix, right?
No, absolutely.
But it's no, the story has, I don't see the story. Like I could pull something out of the one before.
Yeah.
I would be really working hard to pull anything out of the main plot. But what it does is clearly the show is about Malcolm and his family and telling that story. And that is the key story. And so not all of them are going to
tie in completely. Now, we learn a lot about Danny, right? That was nice. Yeah, we learned a lot about Danny, where she's from, what her background is. Like, that's important for us to learn, and I'm glad we learned it, right? But fundamentally, like, there's just not a lot to dig into here this week. If there was one thing I could say that the theme was, which, you know, I guess is true, is that we could assume that parents will go to any lengths for their children.
To protect their children.
Yes,
yeah.
To protect their children. And if something bad happens to their children, to avenge their children.
Yes. Okay. And so yeah, that's where I was going to go.
Yeah. That's the only thing in this episode that really digs into the themes of the show. I think it's safe to say, and that does dig into the themes of the show. But again, but in the same way that the previous episode only had the barest connection. Here, it's only the barest connection.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's,
and weirdly,
that's,
by the way, if you had flip flopped the murders, right? And the weird part is, what's going on with Malcolm, right? If you had put it so, and it's, you couldn't do the drug stuff in this episode as well, obviously, but if you would put the episode about the mother doing whatever she could to avenge her child and to protect her child, which is the theme of the episode, with the previous episode subplot about him suspecting his mother and like the lengths she went to protect her from him from his father and all of that stuff, I think it might have melded together the two halves of the episode, then putting the influencer stuff with the mother, presumably, you know, did she or did she not know about the murders? See what I'm saying? I mean, it still wouldn't have worked perfectly, but I think it would have been a clearer connection. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, after all, you do have to find something to complain about.
What's hard is that
we're watching this show and there really isn't an awful lot to complain about.
No, not at all. No.
I mean, that's the whole point. That there
the thing
is
about
this...
Criminal Minds was it's easy to do a podcast about Criminal Minds in a way because every other line somebody says is the dumbest thing you've ever heard.
We're rewriting those episodes.
But there's nothing in this episode I would pick. Like I said, you could, the only thing I'm finding to address in these episodes is, well, maybe you could make the themes more clear. Whereas you watch Criminal Minds and it's like they haven't even heard of a theme.
Yeah, so what are you complaining about, right?
No, I know. It's like, well, no, but I mean, it's like, I'm not comparing this to Criminal Minds. It's a lot better than Criminal Minds. Like, but, so you always want to compare things to the one better thing and say, try and get yourself up to this level. You should, and so it's like, you don't say, I mean, I remember the best piece of writing advice I ever heard was that you don't have to write the best thing that's ever been written. You just have to write something better than the worst thing you've ever read. I'm like, that's actually pretty good advice. Mm-hmm. But that's not how you become, that's how you get yourself to start writing. That's not how you become great. You become great by looking at the best thing that's ever been done in the genre you want to do. And you say, okay, well, what can I add to the conversation if that already exists? And so any TV show about serial killers has to, in every episode, say, am I better than Millennium? Am I better than Hannibal? Right? And if you're not better, and I'm really enjoying the show, but they've never done anything better than Millennium or Hannibal yet.
Yeah, well,
but it has the but it does have the chance to get there. And that's why I'm harping on them about theme so much, because caring a lot about theme is how you build a really resonant story, is how you build a story that sticks with you. When it all comes together and every part of the episode was building that theme and making the same point, that's where you create episodes. That's what they did in the pilot. That's what they did in the Annihilator episode. That's what they did in the third episode. And that's why it's off to such a great start. And now we're getting into episodes that are still good television, still really good television, but they're not, you know, hinting that this is next level television the way the first three episodes of the show did. I'm not saying they're like settling into mediocrity or something. I'm not being horrible to them, obviously. It's still a really good show.
Okay,
but well, that's why I'm being hard on it, obviously.
Okay, and the first two episodes.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that these guys can't do, right? Yeah. Are the showrunners Chris Fedek and Sam Claver?
Yeah. It's Claver. Their show, it's their idea, and
it's their show. They wrote the first two episodes.
Of course. Yeah, well, and they have to write the pilot. That's what makes you the creator. Yeah.
And then they wrote the next episode, and then the writing room is in charge.
Is taking over. And
is taking over and trying.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they're not doing a good job. They're obviously doing a good job, but it's not on the same, you know, level.
Well, at least let me go, because I was looking at the writing room. No, Sclaver does another episode, like episode 13, and then they go and do the last episode. So
showrunners to just come in again. That's how The Mentalist worked. Like the guy who created the show would do the first and last episodes of the season. And then if he had a showcase episode halfway through the season, he'd do that episode too. That's a totally normal thing for television.
Yeah. All right. So, you know,
so yeah, we'll see. I cannot wait to see their next episode and see how this all starts tying together. So let's move on to what I thought was the best of this week's three episodes.
Yes. This one all was Souls so and sad. Sadists.
Oh,
so sad. That's the first, you know.
So a guy is stabbed in the park and he has literally 100 stab wounds on him. So yikes.
Somebody's really pissed off at him.
Somebody's really pissed off. And as Malcolm said, also, there's a really good chance that this is a burgeoning sadist.
Yeah.
Like someone who is getting off on the pain they're causing. Right. Who is enjoying it too much, like who is enjoying because it's not just about killing somebody. It's about the specific pain they're causing them, because we get the horrible thing, that horrible message. It's like, you know, you only have to stab a person like four times to kill them. Like, thanks for that. That's information I desperately needed to have. Jesus. This show sometimes. But yeah, we get that. We get that opening, which is very nice and very creepy. We get more with our beloved Emmy, who we didn't see that much of in the last two episodes. But they're talking about, you know, they're talking about stabbing, so obviously she's gonna have a nice some nice comments to throw in there, and she did. But then we meet the family, and you immediately know who the killer is.
Oh, yes.
Like, 1 second after meeting him, you know who the killer is. And I will say, bravo to the show's restraint for not making him a redhead. It must have taken everything they had in them to have him not be a redhead.
Sorry.
I know. Well, it's the funniest thing when I was watching the episode, right? And this is a reference I'm sure you didn't get, but so they walk in to meet the mother and son, right? And so a guy killed this brutally, right? They talk about, is it a crime of opportunity? Did it just sort of happen? He broke his ankle and they just had a chance to stab him, like they were trying to figure out what it was. And, right, and so they thought it must be someone who just got very angry at him and went for it. And Malcolm says that, like, these aren't practiced wounds, but both Malcolm and the ME confirm that this is not practiced wounds. This is not someone with a lot of experience murdering someone. This is probably someone just finding out, like getting angry at someone, starting to stab them, finding out they enjoy it, and then going too far is their pitch. And so when you hear that, you're like, well, you got a creepy looking son, so... but there's only three suspects. There's the mother, the mother's boyfriend, and the creepy looking son. And the reference I'm sure you didn't get is it's this blonde kid with ridiculously like this shaggy long shaggy hair, right? And I'm sure this was intentional. I didn't notice it right away, and then I realized this is their Halloween episode, and I'm like, oh my god, the makeup people have made him look exactly like the kid who played Michael Myers in Rob Zombie's Halloween. And he does. Like, he looks uncannily like the kid who played Michael Myers in the Halloween remake. So, yeah. I didn't see the Halloween Well, no, nobody. I mean, I know for a fact you hadn't seen it, so that's why I prefaced it with the reference you were not going to get. Yeah. But yeah, like, they were also hinting who the killer was via the costuming, if you had seen that movie.
Ah, okay, yeah. So that's just a little shout-out.
Yeah, it's a little shout-out to Rob
Zombie. But it was pretty clear with him and his rabbits and...
Oh, God, I know. Ugh.
You know, I mean, it was... But it was so...
Oh, it's just sad.
It is.
Because...
sad.
And that's, I think, what I liked most about this episode. And, I mean, I don't know that everybody is going to respond to it as favorably as I did. I think what I like most about this episode, and you tell me about this, is it's not a full character study of him the way the episode of Criminal Minds was, right? Where it's a full character study of this kid who's a burgeoning psychopath. But at the same time, I just watched Malcolm dealing with this kid. When he goes to arrest him and he knows there's somebody possibly bleeding to death in the next room, but his big priority is making sure the kid doesn't think he's a lost cause.
Yeah.
And I compare that to that hideous scene where Spencer Reed basically like talked a kid into trying to kill himself.
Yeah.
Because he so botched what he said to him. And it's like, and here to see Malcolm, because the themes of the show, nobody's born a monster, right?
Yeah.
Also bringing up the theme, I wonder if, like, maybe nobody's beyond hope either.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
Oh, yeah. Well, then, of course, and then underlying that, you then go, I wonder if Malcolm's dad was trying to make him a serial killer.
Well, and that's what I was thinking about last week, right?
When I was
like, what happened with the missing body? And I'm like, and all the drugging, I'm like, did he make Malcolm kill that girl? And he's completely blacked it out. And the fact that he's remembering her in the back of the station wagon, he was there, and there's a picture of him with his dad and the station wagon.
Yeah.
It really does, oh boy, it really does suggest that that's where the plot is going. I don't know
what the father was trying to do and what the father is going to still try to do.
What his goal was to transform Malcolm into like
him.
Yeah, transform him into him. I mean, at the very least, make Malcolm understand him completely. Right, is his goal.
No, I know he's too narcissistic to want Malcolm. No, he wants Malcolm to be like him.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that is his end game. And I think that was his goal when he was a kid, you know, and he stumbled across this girl in the basement, right? I think his goal was to get Malcolm to transform into him. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, and now this is his opportunity by having Malcolm back here. Right, it's his opportunity to do to keep this lesson going and keep this transformation going.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you're right. Of course, yeah, because that's key to the whole business with Ainsley.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, let's get into the Ainsley part of the episode.
You know,
that was really good.
That was really good. And because, but it all fits together and it fits into the main theme that, you know, and, you know, whether that's going to save Malcolm, we'll have to wait till the end of the show.
The whole show.
Ainsley. But so Ainsley, who, of course, hasn't seen her or known her father.
Has had no relationship with her father her entire life.
Yeah, I mean, she was five years old. Yeah. And probably he didn't pay much attention to her.
Oh, definitely didn't.
Anyway, because his focus would have been on his son.
And let's not forget, they had help.
You know?
They're a rich family. They weren't raising their own kids. You know, he was half of his time spent as the most popular surgeon in New York, and half of his time was spent serial killing. He did not spend any time with that girl.
No, except, and he spent time with Malcolm, but what he was doing is just like a pedophile grooming his son.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that was that creepy last week, right? One of the episodes last week where he's showing him the different parts of the body.
I know.
In his office.
Yep.
Right. And then the boy goes to have, you know.
Yeah. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's like, and it's, you're right to describe it as no different than how pedophiles deal with their prey.
Yeah.
Because the whole idea is getting that, like, having a secret with the person. Right.
Yeah.
Having a secret with the child. Oh, well, I'll just tell you about this. You know, it's like, you don't tell your mother what's going on with this thing. And, you know, it's like, this is just for us, that kind of stuff. Like, where it's like, it's a little dangerous. It's a little too old for the kid, and it makes the kid feel important and special.
Yeah.
And like, it's exactly the playbook of pedophiles, is what he's doing with his son. Of course, in this case, it's, as you say, to turn him into a murderer rather than, you know, traditional pedophilia.
Yeah, that's what it is. What's interesting with that, too, is because that always is going to bring up the question, and I can't wait to have it answered. What made Malcolm call the police?
Yeah, I can't wait to find that out, because something had to trigger it.
Yeah, something
had to. Now that we know, once we learned that he didn't call the police, because it's added in the first episode, in the first episodes to say he found the body and then he called the cops. And then now the big reveal happened in episode 3 that it was probably weeks or months.
Yeah.
Him finding the body and calling the police. So you're right. Not only what was his dad doing to keep him from calling the police and that he has all of this lost time he doesn't remember, but the much bigger question, what finally made him actually call the cops?
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to find out. I don't know when, but I'm very excited to find that out.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, I mean, it's very interesting. The whole Ainsley thing, like, and the mother who has been warning her daughter, Malcolm, who's been warning the daughter because they're both well aware how manipulative he is. And then that reveal that he had set the whole friggin' thing up.
Set what up?
He set the whole, the crazy guy.
What are you talking about?
Ainsley's
interview. Did you watch the next episode? Because at the end of the 6th episode, she's planning to do an interview. I haven't seen the interview yet. You watched the 7th episode, didn't you?
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Don't tell me anymore. Don't say anything more. It's fine.
Oh, no.
I understand. No. Why would you not be able to stop watching it?
Oh, my God. I thought I'd stopped at 6, but you're right. I watched
7.
Oh, no. Well, we're doing it tomorrow, so.
Yeah. Okay, well.
Because I'm reading this thing and going, why isn't it talking about Ainsley's interview?
No, like, this whole episode, the side plot is Ainsley trying to, you know,
goes to meet her father, wants to set up
the interview.
Yeah.
And the whole episode, I think, and that's important for the theme because it really gets into child abandonment and child abuse, where it's like her mother thought she was protecting her by never letting her, like, essentially pretending her father didn't exist for her whole life. But all that wound up doing was making her feel the absence more strong.
And this holds very much. There were times when I really wanted to take my children away and just not have them have anything to do with their father. And it was the child psychiatrist who said to me, you can't do that, Sheila. I know why you want to do that. But if you do that, what is going to happen is your children will create idealized forms of this man. And the reality won't hit them until they're 18 or 20 or 30 or maybe never.
And it's going to be hard when it does.
And it's going to be really hard when it does. No, they have to interact with him now, no matter what.
No, but you're absolutely what I'm saying is,
and the idealization is played out here, the extreme idealization, and the problem is the mother is incapable of marrying someone else.
Yep.
I mean, she can't. I mean, I mean, how could you? How could you?
Yeah. I mean, when your first husband is this unbelievably famous serial killer, it's not easy, especially when you're a society woman, to immediately just go out and find a replacement. I mean, but you're right that would have been the best thing for the kids to have
an alternate,
someone to replace, another father figure to replace the surgeons, Dr. Whitley's influence in their life.
Well, let me put it this way. Yeah, and let me put it this way. She wouldn't, I mean, after all, she married this man.
Yep.
And she lived with him for I don't know how many years, 10 years, 12 years.
Well, I mean, it's a few years longer, like, because they didn't have...
They say 20 years.
Yeah, because based on their ages, they didn't have Malcolm right away.
No.
You know, so obviously they were married for, like, probably, as you said, 20 years.
Yeah, and so what happens, right? You know, how do you ever trust that any other man isn't going to have this bizarre secret life?
Yeah.
How can you... And then she's got her own guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of this happened.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, because she wanted her life. And then she lost everything. As she says to Malcolm, she lost everything. And you know.
To the point where, as we learn in the episode, she can't even give money away.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to be associated with her in society circles.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that.
Yeah, but it's it does give us a window into how stressful her life has been, because she can't even do charity, which is supposed to be the default thing rich ladies can do to feel valuable, is to go out and found a charity. And she's got tons of money and she can't give it away. And we meet a character who will be coming back, who wants to work on human trafficking and does not care where the money comes from. So I don't know what's going on with her, but it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, clearly a character we're going to be seeing more of. But yeah, we didn't talk about it, but that's an important part of the thing, too. She's completely... The husband
isolated.
Has not only committed these murders, he has, like, completely isolated his family. Yeah. Only his daughter has,
escaped
only
it.
His daughter escaped it, but had, as we find out in this episode, has she really?
Yeah, of course
has
not.
She really escaped? And the answer
no, because she always knew she had a father.
Yep.
It's not like she hid that she had a father.
Yeah, it's not like she didn't know. And she found out who her father was early enough, because she doesn't even have a different last name. At least Malcolm changed his name.
Yeah.
No matter how preposterous that name change was, he at least put in the effort.
Yes.
But they're still going by the same name. And she says that she does a spiel about how she didn't want to let him take, her identity from her. And that's great and all. But for your daughter, maybe, I don't know, maybe moving out of New York, changing your names might have been a good plan.
Go someplace else.
You can go literally anywhere else. Because, spoiler alert, New York society is a very insular and cliquish place. But outside of New York, no one knows who any of the New York socialites are.
Yes. And as somebody just said on, never mind.
Were somebody you going to do a bit?
Well, no, I was just going to do another bit. Somebody, as they're talking, about Trump being so desperate.
Yeah.
I mean, this is way too late, but
being
so desperate because nobody wants him. He's a pariah, they said, in New York now.
Yeah.
And,
Well,
they don't want him in Palm Springs. So where the hell's he going to go?
Not Palm Springs.
Well, wherever Mar-a-Lago is, it's Palm Springs.
It's not Palm Springs. Palm Springs is in California.
In California.
Yeah.
Whatever Mar-a-Lago is in.
Yeah. Whatever city. Yeah. They don't want him there. He can't go back to New York. And he keeps telling stories about how pathetic it is when a guy would show up, like, who he would see at all of the New York parties, but then that guy would become disgraced or lose all of his money. And suddenly, you know, he either doesn't get invited to the parties or he shows up at the parties and no one will associate or talk to them. And he's like, that's clearly what he's most afraid of.
Of course. Of course.
And now that's what's happening.
He's going to lose it all and he's not making it. Anyway, never mind. Let's go back to this episode. But it does relate.
It does relate because we're talking about what New York society is like and how it is its own completely separate insular world. That was her whole life. And he took that away from her.
Yeah. Everything.
And instead of, and this is something that I think we're going to get deeper into her character at some point, it's something about her that you can say she didn't just move to another city and try to craft a new life. Yeah. As she said, she kept his last name. She didn't go back to her maiden name. She kept his last name and she's like, no, I'm going to be in defiance of all the people who want to shut me out and I'm going to still be me. And it's like, well, I think we're going to find out over the course of the show whether that was a good idea or not.
Yeah, well, and the other thing that the one question I had too, I mean, our doing these shows are the questions we have for the next ones that we watch, because the extra one that I watched doesn't solve that problem. But we didn't talk about when he finds that old picture. Like, my question there was, why did Jessica keep that box?
That's a really good question.
And didn't she ever look at it?
Yeah, because he had a shoebox of mementos.
And didn't she ever look at the pictures or anything?
Really good question. Yeah. And that's something we might hear more about.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's going to keep
us. There's a lot of places for this to go. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what keeps us watching this.
And I think the show is well written enough that I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that they have answers to these questions.
Yeah.
And this isn't a lost situation.
Yes, we don't want to talk about Lost. No, I mean,
obviously,
Lost,
we're never going to talk about Lost.
Lost. But as everybody just goes, oh, Lost.
What were you thinking there, guys?
God, you had to do something better than that.
I know. All right. So that is going to be that. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you'd like to recommend other profiling related fiction you think we should check out, because this was a recommendation and honestly, it worked out pretty well. Mm-hmm. Drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you back here next Tuesday for more Prodigal Son. And of course, on this Thursday for more Criminal Minds season 14, which it has its charms.
Yeah, well, we'll get there.
We'll get there. But anyway, if you're listening to this on some sort of a podcatcher or app, be sure to rate and review it because that is how people find the show. We'll see you back here next week. But until then, I'm going to say that's right. Au revoir.
And have a good week.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.